Is there anyone? This is Charles Gomes. Please go ahead.
JJ, that's Chuck. Charles is Chuck.
Okay. All righty. We've started the recording. Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning, everyone. Reloading. Okay. My name is James Scott Evans, and I was, or am currently serving as the chair of the Working Group Work Team. And this is a subgroup of the Policy Steering Committee, Policy Process Steering Committee, the PPSC, which was delegated the task of coming up with some guidelines with regards to the working group model that we have been directed under the board directive to transition over to in the policy development process under the generic name supporting organization. So, this is part of the GNSO improvement process. Our objective was to improve the structure and the operations, including the development of a working group model. Basically, working groups are intended to be, you know, more open and inclusive to participants and allow them to tackle issues using consensus building approaches. Basically, it's getting away from a situation where it's a constituency-based model, but a model wherein all members of the ICANN community, internet stakeholder community, can participate and have a voice in the policy development process. So what we did was we brought together the charter drafting guidelines and the working group operating model into one document. In other words, we started out with the concept of having two separate documents. One would concentrate on sort of giving a guideline to chartering organizations, which for the most part would be chartering drafting groups designed by the generic supporting organization, but it could very well be another organization such as the address supporting organization or another advisory group that wanted to inform a working group. So it's a charter drafting document that sort of gives a guideline for what you do when you draft a charter for a working group. And the other was a working group operating model. We've since, after working through the process, put both of these into one document, because they cross-reference to each other and they flow sort of as a living, breathing document of one. So they are now in one document, although they are two sections that serve two very different, though related, purposes. It was developed by volunteers from different parts of the ICANN community. We had ALAC representatives. We had non-commercial constituency representatives. We had registry representatives, we had members from the ICANN board, so we had a lot of representation on this particular process. Luckily for us, many of the participants had also been involved in other organizations which use a similar style of policy development, so they could bring to the table their experience to help us guide as we put together these documents. We have now published the draft document for public comment. Marika, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was published around February 5th of this year, and it will be open for public comment until March 22nd, 2010, which is about a week after this meeting ends. And as if you all know, you can go to the ICANN website, and there is a link to the public comment section, and you will be able to find this particular section. It has the document in an Adobe format, which you can download and review, and then it has a process and method for you to add any public comment you would that will be considered by the group. So following the close of the comment period on the 22nd, the work team will review all the public comments that are submitted, and they will take those into conference and discuss them and review them and decide whether there needs to be any updating or revisions to this particular document based on the observations from the community made through the public comment period. once this is done and a final draft is put together, we will then submit this to the Policy Process Steering Committee, which is a diverse group of representatives from the stakeholder community that serve on a Policy Process Steering Committee, and they will review it to ensure that they don't have any questions and feel like that it is headed in the right direction. And should it pass that threshold test, the PPSC would then pass it on to the GNSO Council for consideration at that particular process. Now, the Council can accept it. They can ask questions and send it back down to the Policy Process Steering Committee, which could then send it back to the work team. So those are the things that could happen. It can either be accepted, it can have clarification requested, or have specific revisions requested at the GNSO Council level. The working group guidelines, the content of that is, that document really sets out the roles and responsibilities for a working group and the members of a working group. It explains how you form the team, what announcements are going to be given, and how are they distributed throughout the community, how a participant or a potential participant would self-identify themselves as wanting to be a member of this particular a particular working group that's been circulated, how they would file a statement of interest or a disclosure statement. It explains how to plan the first meeting. It explains the team roles and responsibilities of the chair, if you want to have vice chairs or if you want to have co-chairs, if you want to have a secretariat, what role staff would play, whether you can and cannot or should not have outside experts, and how you work with ICANN staff to ensure that you are informed in that process and you get that you can use sub-teams. Basically, this document doesn't set out a rigid format. It sets out a potpourri of choices that you can do and what those roles and responsibilities or those choices would look like and what they would do if you put them together in a certain particular structure for your work team. It also sets out the norms for participating in a working group, such as what participation level is necessary, guide the chair and in deciding whether there is adequate representativeness from the community within the working group, or do they need to do more publicizing of this and getting help for the council or the chartering organization to get better representativeness. It sets out a way to ensure that the process is integrity, because it is a bottom-up process. It's very important that the working group process have a considerable amount of integrity around it, so that the solutions or draft solutions that are presented there are solid and come from a well-grounded, well-rounded position. It also very importantly discusses individual and group behaviors and norms. I mean, one of the things we have at ICANN is we have a diverse group of backgrounds, interests, and levels of participation, and this sort of sets out how a working group should function and what the civility level should be and what tolerances there should be for different views and different ideas. And it sort of gives guidelines and norms for how to behave in a world full of such robust ideas and diversity. It talks about the rules of engagement, how we deal with one another. A lot of these rules of engagement and behavioral norms have existed within ICANN for a long time, but they're very difficult to find, and so this sort of drills things that have been in existence for a long time and places them in one document at the forefront for people to be able to find them and understand exactly what the ICANN board and the ICANN community expects of one another when it's going through the policy development process. It talks about the standard methodology for making decisions, which is a consensus-based model, and it explains the different types of consensus that have been identified within this process over the last 12 years, and explains the role of the chair in deciding when there has been consensus and what rules and responsibility, depending on the level of consensus that is identified by the chair and the working group, what the roles and responsibilities are for informing the community with regards to that. It also sets out an appeal process with regards to a structure within the working group. So, in effect, if there is a problem with a behavior or representativeness, or there is a problem with regards to consensus, it sets out a structure of how to deal with conflicts or disagreements on determinations by the chair of the working group so that we can ensure that those are vetted. It talks about the logistics and requirements, such as, you know, how do you plan a session and what are the general meeting logistics like? It talks about communication and how to use the tools, the collaboration tools that are available through ICANN. It sets out the understanding of what the minimum requirements are for translation so we can ensure that we are informing and receiving input in from many corridors and corners of the world that do not speak English so that they are informed and involved. It talks about the briefings and subject matter experts and how we would use them and do that. And then lastly, it talks about what products and output we expect from the working groups as they put their working product out there. One of the most important things I think that this document does is it also has at the end of each process a requirement that a working group do a self-evaluation about how it performed under the working group guidelines and how it performed. And this is something that the guidelines recommend that the GNSO review on a periodic basis to ensure that this is living, breathing document doesn't need to be adjusted in order to make from any, you know, shortfalls or changes within the community that were not foreseen when this was originally drafted. So then we have the Charter Guidelines document, and this is a separate document. Although it's related and it's in the same docket, it's a separate section with a separate purpose. The purpose of this is to inform chartering organizations about the general format and procedure for drafting a charter that would then been used by the working group to inform its work in policy in the policy development process. You get some general implementation guidelines like how you announce the working group, talks about the transparency and openness, what the role of the chair is, what other roles are, and most importantly, it gives a charter template that sort of can be used by a chartering organization, and it leads you through a series of questions and bullet points that you then can inform so that we get some standardization within this, such as, you know, the mission, the purpose, what the deliverables will be, staffing, organization, rules of engagement, documents, history, how that is all going to be handled. And importantly, it gives a chair checklist to be used by the working group chair to ensure that they themselves are also making sure that as they launch a working group, they are doing so in somewhat of a structure that will hopefully lend, while flexibility, also some consistency to the working group process as we move forward. You need to know that if you look at this document as it's been posted for public comment, there are a number of placeholders that have been placed in the document because the Operations Steering Committee, I think that's the OSC proper, but what they're doing is they're looking at certain particular issues that they have yet to come to a consensus solution to or recommendation for, and we know that whatever solutions or recommendations they come to, if eventually accepted by the PPSC and then the GNSO, would need to be put into this document. So what we've done is we've put a placeholder there under a heading, knowing that that work is yet to be completed, and understanding that when it is completed, it will just be slotted into this particular placeholder. So once the PDP work team finished its work, the specifics for that work group need to be incorporated in this document as well. And again, there are placeholders in this document that are there waiting for the information coming from those particular work teams that are continuing to do the work in tandem with the working group work team. So right now we're in the public comment period. It has just now been a little over a month since it's been posted. There is another 12 days left in this particular period. And what we're looking for from the community is for a review to see, have we touched on all the elements? Have we covered everything that needs to be covered? It's like so many things, when you're the drafting team and you're working on this, you begin to see only the tree and may lose sight of the forest. And so we're asking for folks who may have a little bit more of a broader landscape because they haven't been focused on the particulars of this particular project to help inform us and let us know if there are things that we need to tweak. Have we missed something? Is there something else we need to look at? Did we get it right for the procedures and guidelines we put out there? Are you comfortable with those? Do they seem like we've struck the correct balance with, again, some type of structure, but a structure loose enough that it allows for individuality with the working groups so that because each working group, you know, there's no limit on size. Some could be as big as 60. Some could be as small as 10. I mean, there's just no formalized, absolute hard and fast rule, but there needs to be some general guideline for some type of consistency so that we all have a basic understanding when we talk about a work group, how that functions and how it operates. Do we need more detail? Do we need less detail? These are the kinds of things that we're looking for. If you'll see here, Marika, I'm never going to get that name right. Marika has so graciously placed into the slide the link that you will see here on the website, again, which would have a PDF copy of the particular guidelines that we've put forth and the opportunity for you then to post a comment to help inform us about your opinion about the work that we've done and whether you agree, disagree, believe that we need to do more, we need to do less, to help us inform our project as we go forward. So now I'll open it up to the floor to any questions or comments. Marika is here too. I was hoping Aubrey Doria and Cheryl Langdon Orr would be here because they were also very active members of the team. But Marika, if you would help me answer questions so that I'm not sitting in a conference room at 4 o'clock in the morning alone having to field everything. So I'm opening it up to the floor. Ask away.
I have a question here from Steve Del Bianco. Go ahead, Steve.
Marika and Jay Scott, great work on this. I wonder whether we could add a few flow charts or workflow diagrams at appropriate places to sort of crystallize, give you a break from the text. And I'm pretty sure you probably drew some things on a whiteboard or back of a piece of paper or a napkin while you were meeting. And so it doesn't have to be fancy sections where either the interaction between parties, we'll call that a context diagram. It just begs for one of those. And another would be places that call for a workflow as things flow over time from one group to another.
I think that's an excellent idea. You know, there are people who are verbal and people who are visual. And you want to make sure that you're reaching people in different modes of expression so that you are as clear as you can be. Steve, it would be wonderful if you could, if it was nothing more than a one or two page public comment where you make suggestions about where you think those workflow diagrams could come in, and we certainly will take that under advisement.
Thanks, Jay Scott. Mikey O'Connor has a draft one because the BC is preparing some complimentary comments, and they'll include a chart or two. I wanted to make sure you were open to that.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Ed. That sounds great.
Anyone else?
Chuck is in the queue. Chuck, go ahead.
Thank you. Let me first of all compliment the group model work team because you guys did some great work, and I really appreciate all the time you spent into this. This is one of the very important and critical things going on with regard to GNSO improvements. So my compliments and my thanks. First, a fairly simple comment and question. You use the term chartering organization throughout, and that's fine. I'm curious, though, as to why you chose that general term. Is it because you see this being used possibly by constituencies and stakeholder groups as well? Or did you have some other reasons? And by the way, I think a lot of this could apply to us in stakeholder groups or constituencies. So whatever the answer is, if you're going to use that term, I think it would be helpful to state the reason why you chose that.
Personally, I believe the reason was because we believe that the GNSO was not the sole body within the ICANN community that could charter a working group. As I said before, we thought the ASO might do so, and other groups, supporting organizations and or advisory committees, and certainly stakeholder groups and or constituencies could choose to use this model if they felt like it fit within their particular organization. And that certainly isn't a problem, Chuck, to say that we've used a generic term in order that this might be more broadly applied.
Thank you, Jay Scott. That's very helpful. And again, I think it might be helpful, especially maybe for those of us old-timers, when you first see that, you wonder, what's a chartering organization? But I figured it out. It didn't take me too long. Still, an explanation might be helpful. The second point, in Section 2.2, the liaison bullet says, the liaison is expected to play a neutral role. I think it might be better to say something like, the liaison is expected to play a neutral role in communicating information from the working group to the CEO and vice versa. And my thinking there is we have such a challenge finding resources for working groups and in addition then finding liaisons that it'd be nice if we could have liaisons that all they do is serve that role. But I think more common we're going to have liaisons who serve that role but also may represent their constituency or stakeholder group or advisory committee, whatever the case may be. And that's why I suggest a little more general language, because in cases where they are also representing their constituency or stakeholder group, we wouldn't want to restrict them from fulfilling that role as well.
I think that's an excellent point. Marika, can you make sure that gets notated so that we can consider that when we consider public comment?
Yes.
Thank you.
We have another question here from Chris and then Steve.
Chris Chaplow speaking. This looks an incredibly interesting document, I must admit. I feel as though I've sort of been wandering around the forest and then suddenly come across a bathing pool or something. And I'm trying to understand how I've completely missed out on any of the information or from this work team. So, just want to say that. And obviously I've got to read the document and get up to speed. And luckily I'm still within the comment period, because I've just... with the CCC team being on my first working group, so I think a lot of the novice experiences are sort of still fresh in mind, and I should be able to make some comments. Thanks.
Super.
Steve?
Steve Del Bianco. In the section on the chair, I want to make sure I did that. If it's in here, that may I have missed it, but when a working group first meets, in those awkward meetings when you're trying to figure things out, sometimes over the phone, it's a really tough time to pick a chair before you know very much. And something I've done in other organizations was to appoint, sometimes by acclamation, an interim chair, a staffer or somebody more senior. Is that in here, Jay Scott, and I've missed it?
It is. I think it says that I believe it may be the liaison who serves as a chair, but we'll look at that. But there is some sort of provision for that.
And if the liaison is not the appropriate person, I guess I want to suggest that we do everything possible to make it acceptable practice that when the team first meets, the last thing I want them to worry about is jockeying for position to be elected chair.
It specifically states in the document that the lack of a chair should not slow anything down.
Would you go so far as to say that no working group should even elect its real chair until the second or third meeting?
It just depends. We're not going to be that rigid, because some may come in already knowing who they want their chair to be. I mean, that's the problem with this. You have to allow, I believe, and I think the group would agree, flexibility that, both of them are okay.
one that wanted to needed to wait two or three meetings before they elected the chair, and something, one that came in and they were all at consensus on their chairs before they even get started.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to imply that it shall. There's plenty of times in this document where we use the word should in a way of being advisory. And if I were to prepare a comment, whether it's through the BC or individual, along the lines of working groups should appoint interim chairs for the first meeting or two, how would that wash with those of you who worked on it? Is that something you'd reject out of hand, or is it a reasonable idea?
This is Marika. Maybe one comment, because some of the working groups follow a drafting team, and there you might have already had people that have worked together with each other for quite some time. So in that situation, there might be a very clear idea in the first working group meeting who would be the appropriate person to chair. So personally, I think it's, you know, I would leave it up to the working group, but make it maybe clearer that they have the option that they don't have to elect a chair at the first meeting, but indeed they can go either with an interim chair or the liaison that normally serves as the interim chair until the working group is formed, to make sure that they know what the options are. But it's my personal opinion.
Just a final comment on that. When I was a first a newcomer to working groups at ICANN, the first call, somebody who really had an agenda, knew how they wanted to drive things, would volunteer to be chair or sort of be chair by the end of the first call. And having a document I can point to as a newcomer and say, well, you know, we don't really have to have a chair first meeting. Why don't we defer that? In fact, it's even a recommendation of our working group guidelines. This sort of takes the air out of that balloon to give us a chance people...
You know, that's true, and I agree, but again, all we would do is say that it's not necessary. We're not going to tell you that it's the best practice to wait, because as Marika said, many times these things come in and everybody's very comfortable with who the chair is going to be. But I agree with you, Steve. We need to give a mechanism for a newcomer that wants to raise a point of order to say this isn't a requirement in order to continue, has something that they can point to justify that position.
Thanks, Jay Scott.
Chuck?
Thank you. I just have a couple more comments, but let me first of all follow up on that. I thought the vertical integration kickoff meeting that occurred just an hour or so ago was a good example of how it can work. I'm not saying it has to work this way. I think your points are well taken in that regard, because we need to be flexible. And that is, we had selected a council liaison. The council liaison temporarily chaired the meeting, and it was actually decided in the kickoff meeting today, because the membership isn't complete yet, to hold off in selecting a chair until such time that the membership was more complete. But anyway, just to follow up on that, I thought that was, the discussion was very helpful.
Yeah, I agree, Chuck, and I think it's also important, and one of the things that at least Marika can correct me if I'm wrong, one of the most important things my team felt was they did not want the absence of a appointment of a chair to slow things down. So they want the working group to be able to have some way to interim push things forward until that formality was fulfilled.
Yeah, totally agree. That was right on your part. Now, I have two more comments that I'll share now. Most of the rest I'll just submit in writing, because some of them are more trivial and really don't need to be done in a public session like this. The next one really is very similar to the one I made about the liaison. In section 613, the second paragraph says, a chair should not become an advocate for any specific position. Well, I agree with you that when the person is fulfilling the chair role, they should not do that. Again, very similar reasoning as I stated with regard to the liaison. Oftentimes, we have to select chairs who are also an advocate, a representative of their particular organization. Now, in the ideal world, which, of course, none of us live in, it would be nice if we had a totally independent chair that doesn't have to do that. But often I think we will. So I suggest it would be better to say something like the chair serve neutrally in the capacity of chair, and any times that he or she is not acting in the chair role, should identify those instances so everybody's clear.
I think that is the reality. The one thing that I am not comfortable with is I do not think the chair should vote. I don't care if they say I'm a chair and I'm stepping out of my role of chair and I'm going to give my opinion for the group I represent or my personal opinion, because I certainly, as Marika will say, did that during this group. But I don't think the chair should vote.
Well, the problem with that, J. Scott, is that you're eliminating some possibilities for chair, and I think that we're going to have a hard enough time identifying people who will spend the time and people that have the right skill sets to be chair, so I don't think we should eliminate those possibilities. In fact, at the council level right now, if we followed that same principle, and I know this is working group guidelines, not council guidelines, I, of course, would not be able to serve as chair. So as long as they distinguish when they are performing a representative role of their organization, I don't see any problem with that at all.
But we certainly will take that under advice. I appreciate that.
Thank you. And then my last comment, in section 6223, my feeling is it's really not always possible to set time frames in the charter in advance. I think there will be situations when probably we're going to have to have a charter and we ask the working group to, develop some time frames themselves and coming back to us. I just think we should have that flexibility, and we shouldn't demand that time frames always be in the charter. If they can be, that's great. But I don't think that will always be the case, and certainly we've had that experience.
I agree, and we can look at that. I mean, I think what we're most wanting is the issue of time frames to be addressed. Addressing it, in my mind, to say that we're going to allow the working group to come back and give us a more robust explanation of a realistic time is at least addressing.
And that's good. I totally support that, and I just think probably the language should be cleared up a little bit in that regard.
Okay, thank you.
Alan?
Thank you. I just one short comment. I'd like to support what Chuck said about the chair both having positions and voting. I think if the rest of the committee is willing, the rest of the working group is willing to elect someone as chair, knowing that they do have a position of their own and will be voting, then I think that should be the discretion of the committee, of the working group, to do that. Otherwise, I think we're, as Chuck pointed out, we're just in a making a difficult situation much more difficult.
Any other comments or questions in the room? Steve?
Well, one of the things we have to do is get more people to join working groups who are either brand new to ICANN or they've been sort of on the edges, and we want to encourage them to get involved. And this document is written for people that understand the process, and I wouldn't for a minute suggest that it be all of it changed to apply to a newcomer. It would lose its effectiveness. It'd be too hard to read. But
Steve, I have for years advocated, and I've talked to Rod Beckstrom about this, that ICANN needs to have put on face-to-face meetings. They need to self-identify potential leaders, and they need to put on workshops with regards to the process and leadership skills in order to keep the lifeblood of leaders new and growing. So hopefully they will do that.
And J. Scott, let me agree completely. And that addresses the need, I think, for good, effective leadership as chair. I was speaking more about members. Where if I worked hard to bring a few first-timers or newbies to an ICANN process, it might not even be at a meeting. I might be enlisting one of my member companies who's got an expert on a particular topic that a working group has taken on via its charter. And I want to throw them into the wolves here to get involved on a team. Now, if I refer them to this document, it'll take quite a while for them to get comfortable with it. And I'm wondering if we add a section in there. Maybe I'll get Chris Chaplow to write it, because he just went through this. A section at the beginning where he says, if this is your first ICANN experience, relax. Here's what your role is. Here's what your responsibilities and rights are. And you could always turn to staff for help or something. Chris, would you take that challenge? He's nodding yes, Jay Scott. So something like
newbie. That if you want to submit something like that, we would gladly look at it and maybe put it in as an appendix. I think that's an excellent idea. I mean, this whole document is to educate and inform and bring some sort of consistency of understanding for what's expected. And so a newcomer has, we want their experience to be just as consistent and positive as we do the old guard as well.
Any other comments? Looking around the room. Chuck, you still have your hand up?
Sorry about that, I'll take it down.
Chris, go ahead.
I don't know if it's relevant to this work team, but another...
It might be something broader, because of course it doesn't only apply to GNSO, so it might be, I don't know, the ICANN communications team or the meetings team
right.
to look into that.
Right. I do know that the IPC is starting a very similar effort. So, like a newcomer's packet of information that explains terms, explains what's expected, explains all that kind of stuff. So I think that's a great idea.
Well, if you're already doing it, we can just copy and paste that. Graham?
We don't share. We're IP people, remember?
Oh, right.
We don't share that. We don't pay royalty.
Graham?
Yeah, just one suggestion I had is I know that Scott Pinzon has worked as like a podcast, and so it might be nice to do. I'm a big believer in video and a big believer in audio because, and we can try and do them in different languages to get over the translation barrier. But that is a big written document is often really intimidating. So maybe we can try and enlist him. I know that he's kind of excited about that stuff. So maybe we can try and get an audio podcast on it or a video, something like that.
I think that's a really good suggestion.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
I will definitely take that back to Scott, because I know he has an agenda, and you know, once we get done with his document, we can actually do one on the document, but then maybe as well a separate one on maybe ahead of the next ICANN meeting, like, you know, what does it mean, and where can you sit, and where can you go.
Super.
Are there any other comments or questions? Jay Scott, do you have any closing remarks?
I just, you know, I personally want to thank Marika for all her excellent help. She sort of took over this project mid-swim from Ken Bauer. She's done an excellent, excellent job. She's been pleasant to work with and extremely proactive and helpful. It's been a wonderful experience, and I think that, you know, Graham and Cheryl and Giannis and Caroline and Sabai and all the wonderful members of the team who gave so very much of their time, I think so many people do not understand how very much and how very committed people are just in the backbone of making sure that this process works in a smooth and efficient manner, and I want to thank each and every one of them for their help.
I want to thank you as well, Jay Scott, for chairing this effort.
Hear, hear.
All right, guys. Well, I'm going to go to bed, so have a great day. And enjoy your gala, okay?
Sleep well.
Thanks, Jay Scott.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.